Hey everyone, this is Dr. Chris, the Dead TV Podcast co-host. Just a quick disclaimer about the audio for this episode. We were using Facebook recording to do it, mainly because the Skype was not working in one recording studio, and the recording studio that we'd normally record the episodes on had a switchboard malfunction. So we had a lot of complications that night with trying to get this episode recorded due to the different platforms not working on certain computers. We record this at the WCW Studios in Worcester, and it's a really old studio, so sometimes the equipment breaks down, doesn't function right. So I just wanted to let you guys know, so the audio for this is going to be a bit off, but you can still definitely hear us. Everything sounds, it sounds okay, but I just want to let you know. Hope you enjoy the episode, and see you in 2 weeks. And I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And tonight's episode of the Dead TV Podcast is possibly one of my favorite episodes of Kindred the Embrace. And for the synopsis, we have Mr. Seneca, who will give us the synopsis and original air date for this episode.
Tonight's episode is Romeo and Juliet. The original air date was April 10th, 1996. In an attempt to eliminate Julian and become the prince, Eddie Fiore instigates a clan war between the Bruja and the Gangrels. Julian finally allows Cash and Sasha to be lovers, and for Sasha to be embraced, but it's too late. Fiore's men find Sasha first. When it's discovered that a kindred doctor is feeding on children at a children's hospital, Julian sends Daedalus to impose final death. Daedalus forms a bond with one of the victims, a boy who is dying of cancer, and using alchemy saves him. Dun dun dun!
Yeah, and you know what? I completely forgot when I started watching it that that was part of this episode. I was like, oh, this is that episode. Because anyone who has the box set that Mr. Zeneca and I have know what I'm talking about with the connection to this episode.
Yeah, the episode that we reviewed, which it was actually a previously unaired episode, was all about Daedalus's soft side, getting a little bit deeper into his heart. So that episode is called Night Stalker. So it was unaired, but if you get it on the box set, you'll be able to see it. It's an excellent, excellent episode, and I was actually quite surprised that they left it out. But in this episode, we also see Daedalus being kind to children, and this is a very important part of his personality, I believe.
Yeah, and then the bonus material on the box set that we both have has Jeff Kober, who plays Daedalus, putting the makeup back on 20 years later to give us a video diary of what happened to Julian and the Sabbat have invaded, and he reaches out to somebody in particular. I don't want to give it away, but it's kind of a prequel story to something that happens at the end of this episode, which we'll go into when we go over the plot.
Yeah. So shall we dig right in?
Yes, definitely. So we open with some of the most romantic, sweetest music, and if I ever get remarried, I want this played at my wedding.
It's such wistful music. It's emotionally setting the tone that this is a light and romantic exchange between Cash and Sasha. It's quite cute, really, but it's also a little sickeningly sweet, too.
Yes, definitely. And because of the heightened romance in this episode between Sasha and Cash, which finally comes to cultivates with them, we do not get a bromance in this episode, as this is, I think, the only episode we do not get Frank the Cop.
Yeah, Frank's part in this entire episode is actually more trouble than it's worth, I think. But he plays a very, very minor role in the Daedalus Children's Hospital storyline part. Having this episode not focused on Frank as we jump back into the current political vampire storyline was actually quite good.
Yeah, definitely. So correct my correction. He's in it, but just not central to anything that happens with the Sasha Cash story, which is the focus of the episode.
Yes.
Sasha and Cash have a little romantic little overnight sleepover, and then Gangrel, second-in-command girl, shows up with some terrifying news for Cash.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's what she says is, you know, one of the members died, and it was killed by the Bruja clan, and Cash is like, okay, you know, this is starting now, and immediately goes into the fight mode. You know, he's ready to take them on, he doesn't want Sasha involved, tells her to stay out, you know, stay inside, don't go anywhere. And what does she do immediately? She disobeys any good sense about her. And that's the most frustrating part about this whole thing, is that what Sasha does throughout the first part of this, where she shows up at the club where she was specifically told not to go, and then the Bruja clan shows up without their ladies, so Julian is looking at this from above and saying, oh shit, things are about to go down, because they're not bringing any women with them. The news comes through that it's an exciting mess, but having Sasha just kind of throw herself in the middle of it, naive and unaware, was very entertaining, but also I wanted to yell at the screen.
Yeah, I mean, she is trying to make Cash jealous for no reason other than shitty writing. I mean, this is her character, but she's not that bad. And she's doing that sexy dance with the Bruja, and it made me a little sick to my stomach. Just, like, what are you doing, writers? Did you have a break and someone else come in and rewrite your script a little bit? I love how the fact, again, Julian is very much like, they can't be together. The Toreador, who are the sex vampires, or she's all like, they're in love.
Yeah, let them be in love. You know, you're fighting this. Yeah. You know, it's going to happen.
Yeah. And then Cash is like immediately like, I want to embrace her. And he's like, no, dude, I will kill you if you even try that. Does she know about the masquerade? It's like, I don't know. At the same time, he's like, let's go to war with the Bruja. He's fighting two battles at once. One, he wants to bang Julian's niece, which he's succeeding in doing. But he wants to embrace her so that way they could be together forever. And at the same time, he's like trying to convince him, let's go to war with the Bruja. You have me, you have Archon, you have the Toreador. Okay, hold on a second. Let me just point this out. So the war is going to be Julian, Archon, Cash, Lily. That's it? Just those four against the entire Toreador clan?
Well, I mean, it's the clans that are behind them as well. So
the way he said
supposedly
it, though,
the Toreador clan would be behind Julian, and the Gangrel is, of course, behind Cash, and then the rest of the Ventru, you know, people that I think actually we've seen nearly all of them, because Sunny was also there. I think that's who would be behind Julian in a fight.
Yeah.
He would certainly not be by himself, or with the Primogens.
Just the way he says it, though, it doesn't sound like he's got the whole clan. He's like, you have Archon. I'm like, is Archon really that powerful, being such an old vampire?
Maybe. I mean, it depends on his how generationally close he was to Cain. That indicates his power. And so since Archon was actually a prince of the city for such a long time, he might be actually higher in that generational shift, so that his powers could be quite formidable, and we just haven't seen them.
True. Then we switch over to Caitlin, who's got a little bit of a thing in the episode, not very much, but she's basically throwing the information out there that there's terrible child abuse going on at the hospital with somebody that Julian recognizes as being one of the Ventru clan.
Yeah, one of the Ventru clan is attacking the children at night, since they're all found to be anemic and malnourished, and that specifically focuses on one attending physician, you know, this one vampire physician. Now, when I first watched this episode, I was thinking to myself, do we know who this person is? Because Julian's reaction to it, you know, his eyes go colored and he gets the vampire anger about him. And he's looking at these pictures of children. So it's evident that he's really upset that this is happening to innocent people. But also, it almost seemed as if we should have heard about this person, or that this person should have been like a supporting character to really show how dramatic this type of betrayal and use of the community. It just seemed like there was a disconnect. Like me as an audience member, I was wondering if I missed something in previous episodes that had introduced this doctor character. But nothing. You know, it's just kind of a individual doctor, attending physician, that sets off this whole children's hospital storyline.
Clear my throat. The imagery, as soon as Daedalus shows up at the hospital, because Julian hires Daedalus to go after the Ventru, before we started recording, I happened to mention Suspiria hit its 40th anniversary this year. And the imagery in this episode, with Daedalus in the hallway, with everything being red and he's pointing at the evil kindred and chasing after him, reminds me of Suspiria in a way.
Yeah, I love the way that this episode is shot, with lots of harsh light in places and this red effect, which I'm not sure if Daedalus was projecting that effect into the doctor's head and we're seeing it like that, or if he just cut the power and these are the backup generator lights. But it's really super cool. It gets that creepy vibe, and that the attack on the doctor is this flight scene, so it's almost as if Daedalus is just rushing him, and you get the gruesome yeah, really nice.
Mm-hmm. He immediately dispatches of the kindred. If this had been on HBO, we probably would have seen what he did. But then the next scene is Daedalus taking care of the kindred doctor and the little boy, the one who was most affected by the kindred taking the blood of the children, which is something they have a pact never to harm children to do, is sitting there right next to Daedalus, and he's like, "You're not afraid of me?" And he's like, "No, because the other guy was a monster. He hurt us. You saved us, even though you look like a monster."
Yeah. And that, I think, is a very interesting moment, because he's stuffing the corpse into the incinerator, you know, and this kid just comes out, and Daedalus, not even surprised that the child is there. I would have been very surprised if I was the Nosferatu, that almost like a quizzical startle, like, "Oh, you're here." But there was no reaction as such. So he's stuffing this body into the incinerator, a very large incinerator for the hospital. Pretty out of place there, but
a little bit,
whatever.
Huh?
This is television.
but maybe they, this is where they dispose of don't forget, this is probably where they dispose of medical waste.
True, and I've never seen one of those, so I'm not exactly sure how large it is, but man, that was a large incinerator. As we get further into the episode, it brings up a question. You know, later in the episode, we find what is left of the doctor in the incinerator, but aren't in this kindred, the embraced world, aren't sunlight and fire basically going to turn the skeleton into dust?
True, you would think so.
And they find a portion of a skull that's clearly a skull. So the incinerator didn't actually break down that skull enough for it to be, you know, just dust. And I thought in this world, the vampires turn to dust upon sunlight or fire.
Well, they can, I mean, you'll see later on what happens to Eddie, but if they've fed and he'd been feeding off the blood of children, they can be out in sunlight for a little while. Jerry explained that to Frank earlier.
But does that include post-mortem? You know, he's dead, he's perhaps fed that night, so he's, you know, full of life-giving blood. But would that overtake the incineration effect? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's, yeah. know.
That's one question that came up as I was watching this, and it, you know, it could be just TV logic, but it seemed a bit odd, I would say.
Frank is the one who finds the skull in the incinerator, and he pulls it out with his pen, and of course, the other cop that's with them is also a Kindred, and he gets all super glowy eye, and Sonny is like, no, wait, don't do anything.
Yeah.
This is my partner, like, and he's also protected by Julian.
It's like, be cool, man, be cool.
Yeah.
Just shoots him over that look, and that also is another question. Like, both these two Kindred are poking around in an incinerator that Frank would have actually not dealt with had they not been there pointing it out.
Yeah. Then we go back to the Sasha Cash story. There's two plot lines in this episode.
Yeah, the Sasha Cash, which gets the Romeo and Juliet aspect.
Yeah.
And then this children's hospital plot line, which is almost like Daedalus asking for a pet.
Basically, yeah, because he keeps the kid at the house.
Yeah, you know, after the kid, you know, meets him at the incinerator, and you're not afraid of monsters, and Daedalus just takes him home, you know, feeds him, and you know, gives him a can of soda or something, and just talks with the kid.
He wants a friend. Aww, it's kind of like that movie that's in theaters now, When a Monster Calls. Julian is very much like, you got to take the kid back, and the kid knows that Julian's a Kindred, and, you know, that's what Daedalus tells. I think Julian doesn't know that he's a Ventru, but he knows he's Kindred, because he mentions that to Julian, so I'm going to assume Julian didn't know that the vampire in the photograph was a Ventru, because Julian has to tell him that. Am I missing something there, or am I wrong?
Yeah, a kid wouldn't be able to tell which clan he was in.
No.
He just knows that he's vampire as well.
Correct.
And this seems to be one of those psychic things for the kid, because I don't think that the doctor would have, you know, tried to embrace the child.
Mm-hmm.
He's just feeding off of him, but the kid has enough awareness, because one of the things that when Frank kind of discovers that Sonny is a vampire and his other partner is a vampire, there has to be like this, you know, mind wipe erase thing for all of these vampires to do. So I looked in the player's guidebook, and the one spell that would be the most appropriate in this situation would be the forgetful mind. So it's almost like the vampire captures the gaze of the person, and then the degree of success on the roll or whatnot determines how successful it was in kind of in a hypnotic mind wipe erase spell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not directly like telepathy, but it just kind of makes him forget for a little while. So when Sonny erases Frank's mind, he gets put down on the ground, and then Sonny's above him, just like a partner in a cop movie. Like, where's the boy? Where's the boy? And like, oh, I don't know. I don't know what happened. I thought that was hilarious. But, he casted Forgetful Mind.
Then we switch back over to the Cash and Sasha plotline, where we have Lillian once again trying to convince Julian that just let them do it. I mean, they're doing it. They're already screwing in your house, and you don't want that to happen. And would you rather she be embraced by somebody else other than somebody that she loves? And he's like, I want her to be human forever. And, you know, obviously she's also trying to drive the whole point that if she's human forever, she's going to die, and you're still going to be here, and your life's going to suck because you're going to complain and bitch and moan about everything, about like how you have nothing left. And if this is your last human relative, then embrace her so that way you can always have her. And then that's when Sasha shows up, and she's all like, you know, I know that you're different. I know Lillian's different. I know Cash's different. I don't know why I know it, but there's something about you. And I love you, Uncle Julian, but I love Cash, too. I'm in love with Cash.
Yeah. One line that she says is that you seem free. I want to be like you.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
So he's the prince of the city, and, you know, he's the weight of the entire vampire culture on his shoulders, plus the human corporate stuff that he does with his vineyards and all of that. But he seems free. whether that is just the extreme wealth he has or the attitude that that she doesn't see that type of weight and burden bothers him. And so she wants to be like him because of that strength and just the ability to do what you want. Mm-hmm. And so she's asking for an approval on this relationship between her and Cash.
Yeah, which...
Even though she doesn't really know exactly what the being embraced is or anything around that, but she knows that something's up and she wants to be included into that family dynamic.
Let me ask you a question. If this was you and you were Sasha and you found out the man you love was a vampire, would you be able to wrap your head around the fact that, A, vampires even exist? Or would you allow him to embrace you knowing what it's going to change, how it's going to change you and for the rest of your life?
You know, I would probably become embraced because I've only been a few steps away from a vampire in my dear life anyway. Ah. But a bunch. But I would do it with the caveat that if it was the type of, you know, since the vampire mythos has changed, you know, from person to person that writes it, but in whatever mythos that I was going with, I would have to make sure that there would be a way that I could kill myself. Mm-hmm. You know, like I couldn't be like in Death Becomes Her where they drink the potion and their bodies are still moving even though they're completely dead and they fall apart.
Yep.
You know, or even in Fallout, you know, the ghouls, you know, the radiation gives them this extremely long lives, but their looks go and it's kind of a miserable existence. I would make sure that there was still some way that I could kill myself. You know, if I just ran out into the sun, that'd be great. I would take the vampire life because I had that, you know, exit strategy. Okay. What about you?
If I was in Cash, now am I in Cash's position because I'm the guy, or am I still in Sasha's?
Sasha's position.
Okay, so I would have to be Sasha, which means I'd have to be young, no prior marriage, no Xavier, which is my son. I would probably say the same thing, only because the allure of it is so much there. And Julian tells Cash, do it. You know, you protect her. You love her. You know, I'm trusting you that this isn't going to come back and bite me in the ass. Of course, the way he says it, you know, and Cash is all like, yeah! And then he goes to his apartment, yeah. And what does he find?
Oh, no, see, like, Cash is screaming yeah in his head, but no thank you. Not a single thank you. Not like, Julian just gets a nod, you know, and a cool, like, oh, yeah, I thought so. Yeah, type of look on Cash's face, but he didn't thank him.
Yeah.
That irked me. Oh, my God. I just gave you permission to do these things you want to do, and you don't thank me?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I would see that as indignance.
Yeah. I think, actually, in the game itself, if I was Cash and that was my prince, she would probably have been like, don't you have something to fucking say to me?
Yeah, so Cash is really enthused, excited, runs off back to the apartment where she is, and opens the door, and horror. Absolute horror. She's there on the bed.
Yeah.
And the Bruja clan had gotten to her first.
Yep. And it's basically the exact equivalent of a rape scene.
Yes. And it's brutal, just like one.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about how vampires or vampirism is an allegory for being raped. It's never more prominent than in this.
I really can't remember a vampire embracing that was done in movies or television that was as brutal as this.
Yeah, you know, it's usually...
Cash is held against the wall by two other Bruja, where... And then I believe it's Nino, actually, that is on top of her,
yeah,
drinking, and then bites his wrist and shoves it in her mouth.
Correct. The thing is most vampire change scenes that I've ever watched, the person is so dead and near death that changing them into a vampire, I think it's written in possibly such a way that it's not, like, looking as rapey. and they write it so the person is pretty much now almost dead, death-like, so they're, like, passed out. So when they're turned into a vampire, or they're seduced into becoming a vampire, I'm reminded of Buffy the Vampire Slayer when Darla embraced Angel and turned him into Angelus for the first time. They were already lovers to begin with, but she literally forces it on him, drains him, and then cuts her breast, like, right above her breast line. And then, you know, he drops to his knees, and he's about to pass out from blood loss. And she, you know, cuts her chest open and then, like, slowly pushes his head against her breasts to drink from him.
Mm-hmm.
And then buries him, kills him, you know, finishes it by killing him, and then buries him so he'll rise up. And then she's standing by his grave, you know, kneeling down, standing by his grave as he comes tearing up out of the ground to, like, you know, you're here, you're finally, you're going to be like me, and, you know, we're going to fucking destroy the world because we're evil, and we can be like, you know, Bonnie and Clyde of vampires,
well,
before there was Bonnie and Clyde, because it was like 200 years ago. but whereas in this, she doesn't want this. And then, like, they hold Cash against, you know, up against the wall, they drag her away, and it's like Cash comes busting into Julian's place being like, you want a war? You got a war. They just embraced Sasha. They took
and, her and like that hatred, that intense hatred just seething off of both of them because Sasha has just been violated.
Yeah. And he's like, where is Sasha? Sasha is Bruja now. And he's like, oh shit. You know, and then Cash to the rescue capturing, you know, they cut right back to Cash like rescuing Sasha.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, it's kind of funny though that Cash goes to Julian to throw it in his face about what happens, but then goes after Sasha and picks her up like outside the Bruja establishment.
Yeah, they're just hanging outside, you know, and like just a bunch of hoodlums do, you know. But one thing that, like, right after that, once Julian discovers the information, he's sitting there with his head in hands. And he says, I've never felt the horror of an embrace like this. That's a very powerful statement because what we saw, you know, this rape embrace happens a lot. And people get embraced against their will for various reasons. You know, the Nosferatu sometimes does it out of spite. But the horror is that there is a death involved. You know, like, there is a complete change from one species to another. And that can be horrifying, you know, as we saw with Starkweather, you know, when he was embraced and then discarded with no information. And as we saw how Frank dealt with his taste of vampirism through Alexandra, you kind of get this feeling of what being embraced is. So then when you see kind of Sasha going through this, you can tell that she's confused. She says that she's seeing blood patterns on people's bodies, and it's very all-encompassing. So you feel very much for her and feel what she's going through and what Cash is going through, which I think that makes this episode very successful.
Yeah. I love how Julian immediately goes to the Bruja headquarters and just busts right in on the docks or whatever in rage at Eddie. And he's like, well, what do you want me to do? You don't let us embrace anybody. Our numbers are dwindling. We got no women. Or they have women. I'm never really sure. Mm-hmm. I've never seen the Bruja women. Sasha is the only Bruja woman, as far as I can recollect, on this show. You know, and Eddie's just got this kind of, like, flippant attitude towards Julian. Like, you know, what are you going to do? And he's like, bring me the head. Otherwise, we're going to go to war. And you don't want that because I outnumber you in terms of allies. You got nobody. What are you gonna do? Gonna call in some Sabbat or something? Well, they don't say that, but that's what I would say. I mean, Julian is pissed.
Rightly so. Like the whole scene with Sasha in the nightclub, Eddie was trying to poke for what was going to piss Julian off, so Julian would quote unquote make a mistake. Now that they have his button, you know, and Sasha is his button, and they've pissed off Julian royally, a clan war is imminently going to happen. You know, there is no stopping it at this point. She was Helena Troy. Like, it's going to happen.
Then they switch back to the Daedalus plotline with the kid showing back up at the hospital.
Yeah. And in this episode, Daedalus actually cries tears of blood several times in the episode. Nice little touch there. But did you notice what the kid's name was?
Abel.
It's Abel. Yeah, so the vampires are representing Cain, and this kid is Abel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And the kid wants to be, Daedalus realizes that the life of a Nosferatu is not something that he should give anyone as innocent as a child. A child should be embraced. If a child is ever embraced, even though it's against kindred law to embrace children, if that were to happen, A, you'd be dead, but B, it should be by the Torador clan, the Ventru clan, you know, something a little bit that's not going to transform you into a monster. The kid's already dying of possibly cancer, I think. They never really say what the kid's dying of.
But well, no. In the synopsis, it is cancer.
Oh, it is cancer. Okay. Right.
Yeah, it is cancer. And so the kid has been dying of cancer, and he's the sickest one in the entire hospital, so as he says. Mm-hmm. You know, Julian says to Daedalus, you got to get rid of your pet. You know, you can't embrace him. You can't have him. He's got to go back to his home at the hospital. And Daedalus feels so much for him and knows that a clan war is coming, so he sends him back to the hospital and promises that he'll continue to visit him. You know, Daedalus takes him away again, you know, a little later in the episode, takes him away again, and then comes to this realization that he can't bear to watch the kid die. And it's a very sad, sad moment where he can't really bear to see this kid die, can't embrace him as a child. So, but by rules of kindred, they're not allowed to interfere with human, you know, relations. But he does it anyway, because he really cares for this boy. So the very end of the episode, you see Daedalus using his alchemy talents on the boy. But that relationship, this is a really good episode for that. It's in and of itself.
That could have been a whole episode unto itself, the whole thing with the kid.
Yes. The kid is very empathetic of Daedalus's life, and you know, all the paintings that you see in Daedalus's cavernous study, those are all done by, I believe, the actor. So that, you know, even in the title credits, when you see the paintings get slashed, he's actually slashing his own artwork. But there's one that he's working on with the boy there, which is a portrait of the boy. Quite good. Quite good. You notice that?
Yeah, excuse me. I also, when Abel shows up back at the hospital, when the nurse and Frank find him, he immediately turns to Sonny and gives Sonny like a creepy look of like, I know what you are.
Yeah, that was so good. and Sonny just kind of, you know, does one of those, you know, quarter step back like, I see you. Yeah.
Yeah. Switching back over to switching back over to the Cash and Sasha plotline. Cash picks up Sasha, and they immediately drive away someplace secluded, and she is like having almost withdrawals in a way, and she doesn't understand what's happening to her. And, you know, Cash is just basically lets it out to her that they're vampires, that she's been turned into a vampire, and she's part of a clan that hates Gangrel, and she's going to learn to evolve that way, and there's nothing she can do about it, and she needs blood because she's so sick, she hasn't had anything to eat, and he cuts his arm open and feeds her, and this kind of very, like, you know, this is the way life is now, and you're going to hate me, but I still love you, and I want to feed you.
Yeah, and she's just trying to come to grips with what is going on. She feels cold and on fire at the same time. And, you know, since we saw this with Starkweather and saw what it did to him in the previous episode, you know the type of changes that she's going through. And Cash actually treats her a lot like how he treated Starkweather, you know, with this explanation and coming to the rescue and you know, teaching someone how to feed or giving them some blood. Cash does this over and over again, it seems. Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of his roles.
We switch back to the hospital, and Frank is buying Abel a soda and sitting down with him, and Caitlin's trying to question him about where the heck he's been, Abel slips away, and Frank goes after him, and then runs into Daedalus, and Daedalus just flips out because he knows who this is. This is the human that hunts the kindred, and that's when Sonny shows up, because he's also there, you know, because the word has gotten out that the missing cancer patient has returned. And Sonny reveals himself to Frank for the first time. And Frank is like, you're one of them. You're a kindred. And
Sonny, the mind wipe. You don't remember that. Where's the boy, man?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but Daedalus could have killed him right then and there. In front of the boy and in front of Sonny. But Sonny reminds Daedalus that he's under Julian's protection. Can't do it. And, yeah, but you could just tell that moment he so wanted to. Mm-hmm. And he also thought that Frank was coming after him specifically and not just there at the hospital.
Yeah. The missing doctor, Frank let that go to the press. And Caitlin kind of thinks that Julian is, because of his mob ties and the gang war brewing, which is obviously making the local paper and stuff,
mm-hmm.
And she being an investigative reporter, and she's sleeping with Julian, she's making out with him. They haven't slept together yet. She accuses Julian of killing the doctor, or being a vigilante.
Yeah, or having paid someone to assassinate him. You know, and, well, Daedalus wasn't paid, you know, he did actually order the hit on the doctor. But one thing that she tests the trust level here, because Frank actually tells her about a donation, and she finds out that it was $1 million donation to the hospital right after the doctor's death.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Frank is saying maybe it's cover-up money or stay quiet money, and she's like, I don't really know what to believe, and confronts Julian about this. And Julian just says it's because children were going hungry. You know, anemic and malnourished, you know, the money is going to pay for food. You know, that's what he's implying. But I have to agree with her. It does look very shady.
Daedalus uses his alchemy skills, which he attempted to do to seduce the singer to cure the child of his disease. And miraculously works, and Abel is completely cured.
His cancer had gone into remission.
Yep, exactly. And it sets up a plot line, which I guess would have carried over if there had been more seasons. This show only lasted for eight episodes.
Eight episodes.
Into that bonus material that I talk about on the box set, which I don't want to give away. I'd rather everyone listening, go to Amazon or CBS's website and buy the box set, because this plotline with the kid does not end, and it picks up in a unique way. As I mentioned earlier, with Jeff returning to the character of Daedalus with a video diary to this little boy, Abel, now a full-grown man.
Yeah, definitely see it. We will say no, nothing else on that.
And, of course, the war between the clans is about to happen.
This is brilliant. The Bruja clan, in their $4,000 fancy suits, are walking down this almost warehousey, subway-ish type of, you know, industrial area. And they should have been snapping their fingers, because it was totally like a West Side Story scene setup. Da-da-da-da. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Totally. One side coming in, then Julian and Archon and Lily, and then the gang girls behind them. Comes off on the other side, so West Side Story. They just needed singing and tap dance lessons.
Yeah, it's one of the most ridiculous scenes. It's not exactly the Battle of the Five Armies from The Hobbit that you're expecting.
Anyone got hurt.
No, it's a little, well, except for one particular Bruja and Eddie. And then Sasha and Cass show up holding hands, you know, to be like, look, we're like Romeo and Juliet. We're in love still.
But then
for the first time ever, we actually see a bunch of Nosferatu, and they all look like they're ready to go to like a goth nightclub.
Yeah, you know, I would say that if I saw a group of them actually come into my goth club, I'm like, oh. You know, a little Klaus Kinski in here, you know, or Max Schreck, I should say.
Yeah.
Max Schreck.
Yeah.
But Okay, so Daedalus has said that the Nosferatu don't choose sides. Like, they don't go into fights. They don't go into clan wars. They are neutral.
Yeah, and Eddie, don't forget, Eddie even makes fun of that, saying, oh, they're just here to watch.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, but they make this huge entrance that is so super creepy, and it freaks out a lot of the Bruja. Then Daedalus says that, you know, they can fight for a price, and that price is they wanted, you know, the head of the person who committed the violation on Sasha, which that doesn't actually make a lot of sense for me, because Daedalus had nothing to do with that Bruja specifically. Now, what would have been a great rewrite that would have been wonderful and tied both storylines together was that if that person in the Bruja clan was the attending physician. If that guy was the attending physician, Daedalus would have a reason to fight for the death of that person. Him pointing out Nino, it's... why? You know, Daedalus had nothing against the guy, and the Nosferatu clan certainly had nothing against the guy. They're neutral. Mm-hmm. But why did the Nosferatu clan approve of attacking this guy if they weren't going to get anything out of it? And so that, I think, is a bit terrible in the writing. You know, the motivation for Daedalus actually pointing out that particular Bruja. It was okay, you know, it got the job done, but I would have preferred to have seen it the attending physician doctor. That would have made a much more powerful death of the Bruja and revenge for the kid, too.
They converge on Nino like rats.
Oh, yeah, it was like any zombie movie you've ever seen. You know, they're just kind of piling on top of him and just tearing into his flesh, and he screams, and yeah. You know, brutal, but all the other Bruja, it seemed, just kind of had already left, and they're like, okay, this is a little too much for us. The Bruja clan are robbers, thieves, mobsters, criminals, and the Nosferatu clan terrifies them.
Yeah, they capture Eddie, and they drag him away, and throw him outside the car.
Cash actually loads him into the car.
Yeah, and then the sun's coming up. And they throw him outside the car and roll up the windows.
Yeah. This black-tinted windowed car, and he just kind of gets thrown out, and the sun is rising, and of course he hasn't eaten in a while, so immediately the rays of the sun are starting to make him smoke a bit. And the guy does nothing. Eddie just kind of curls up into the fetal position, trying to cover his head and face. When... You know, if I was in the same position, I would try to dig as fast as I could, because I need to get under the ground fast. But we all know that Eddie's not really the brightest bunch, you know, brightest tool in the shed, so he just kind of curls up there. And then the car turns back around after a few moments, turns back around, comes back to Eddie, and out steps Julian. And, you know, do you remember that line that he says, that the best line of the entire episode? Do you remember that one?
No, I don't.
Okay. You exist only because I allow it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if I could say that to someone, oh my god, that's a terribly dominant thing to say on someone.
What? Are you saying in your other profession that you've never said that to somebody?
Well, I mean... You exist. Like, no. I wouldn't say exist, because I would never, you know, someone's life has never been, you know, part of my dominion to control their living or not. Be very interesting if it could, but no, I've never gotten that. I would say you're here because I allow it. I've said that many times.
Oh, okay. All right. That might be more what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. You're here at my party because only because I allow it. You know, that I've definitely said.
Oh. Have you ever had to say that in the context of it, like, something bad happening? And I don't mean bad in the kinky way. I mean bad in the, you could be thrown out.
It's bad as in, dude, you better get your ass together or else you're getting kicked out.
So you've had to be, like, Julian, in a way, at some of your events.
Oh, many times. When you mix sexuality and alcohol and loose inhibitions, some people will overstep boundaries, you know, do things that they're not allowed to do, be obnoxious, you know, touch people inappropriately and stuff like that. So you have to have a very strict rein on the party to make sure that everyone behaves themselves. And then when some problem happens, it's dealt with swiftly. And just like Julian with this doctor, like, it has to be taken care of right then and there as swift as possible. And if that means ejecting out that person or banning them from parties because that the behavior was so out of line, it's not tolerated, then it has to be done. Just period. It has to be done. So Julian doesn't want to kill Eddie because the Bruja clan, they recognize power and strength. So Julian basically coming around, picking him up, having him like crawl into the trunk for safety, and saying you exist only because I allow it. That is an ultimate show of dominant strength, a type of show that even the Bruja clan themselves might question Eddie's ability to lead the clan, because that's showing himself a weakness, and the Bruja do not like weakness.
No. This becomes a bigger plot line later on in an upcoming episode that it really kind of goes into more detail about the Bruja leadership and such. I want to point out that the kid who played Abel, the actor, Emil Hirsch, this was his very first thing.
Oh, yeah. Kudos to him.
Yep. And he's still acting to this very day. He's in stuff that I haven't seen. I can't make any real comment about. But here's something that you might find interesting. He's the voice of Speed Racer in at least two Speed Racer iterations, like adaptations.
Well,
and wow. He's also in
interesting.
One of my, what? Sorry.
I said interesting. It certainly pays the bills.
Oh, yeah. And he's also one of my favorite comedies of all time, starring Elisha Cuthbert, the girl next door. He plays the main character who finds out his new next door neighbor is a former porn star.
And hilarity ensues.
Oh, yes. Honestly, I know this movie is a little tongue-in-cheeky, but I think it's an absolute adorable romantic comedy. Eliza Cuthbert is absolutely gorgeous in this movie. But I completely forgot. He plays the lucky 18-year-old teenager who asks the girl next door, the former porn star, to be his high school senior prom date.
Yeah, I think that'll just, like, a permanent high-five material.
Oh, yeah, totally. So he's had some range. He's also in Milk and Lone Survivor, Into the Wild. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Excellent. Good on him. Yeah. This episode also had a very curious person that was on staff. In the commentary, a brief mention, you know, during the West Side Story-esque clan war scene. But on staff, they had a roach wrangler. You know, a few little roaches there in the foreground as the two clans are meeting. They actually had someone wrangle these roaches and put them in the scene and make sure they were good on camera.
Oh, Mr. Seneca, I have to correct myself. The young boy Abel, Emil Hirsch, he wasn't like some iteration of Speed Racer. He was the live-action Speed Racer in the movie Speed Racer by the Wachowski siblings.
Oh, wow. That's actually a pretty good role.
Yeah. I completely correct myself that he was in... He's not only been with the amazing Liza Cuthbert as a girlfriend character, he's also been with the amazingly stunning Christina Ricci.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty good resume builder right there.
Yeah. So, there's no bromance moment in this episode, really, but what would you say the yum moment of the episode is?
Okay, it depends on your proclivities. You know, the embrace rape is good yum material if you're really into that.
Uh-huh.
But I think most people would say that the yum moment was in the beginning of the episode. Cash and Sasha are in their little hideaway at the very beginning, and... you know, she whispers something in his ear, probably like, oh, let me get you down on that bed, and, you know, etc. And they kind of fall backwards onto the bed. Mm-hmm. And then the next scene, she is clad only in a sheet.
Oh,
and yes. That was yum.
Yes, indeedy. We both agree on that.
Because, you know, they totally did it.
This is the first confirmation that they totally banged, because up to this point they had been making out, we hadn't seen it happen yet. So this is definitely confirmation that this is probably the one and only time, because in subsequent episodes we'll get there about what happened to their relationship.
Yeah, it gets a bit depressing, but this episode is great. This is very positive. Their relationship is good. You know, at the end of the episode, Sasha, you know, has this heartwarming fatherly, daughterly moment between Julian and her, and really brings her back to the Ventru, Ventru side of things. It's at least it seems that way. Uh-huh. And Cash is there with her, and seems that they have accepted that they are now with rival clans, but they're still going to work it out.
Yeah, definitely. And that's pretty much it for the episode Romeo and Juliet. Yeah. For this episode of the Dead TV podcast, there not much else happens. I mean, Eddie calls back in the car, and that's cut right to credits. So we'll be back in like 2 weeks. We have some social media links that you can definitely check out. Like to also thank Jessel Lantern for once again providing us our theme song for the episode.
And I want to just tell everyone, because this was taped on January 8th, 2017, Happy Boy Fest to everyone! Happy Boy Fest! For those of you unfamiliar with this new holiday that I've created, or just made up, is that Boy Fest takes place from January 8th to January 10th, and it celebrates the birth of David Bowie on the 8th and the death of David Bowie on the 10th.
That's
so
funny.
Please, watch some Bowie media, listen to some Bowie songs, enjoy, remember him. He was the glue that was holding this universe together, and we need him to come back.
Bowie was in a vampire thing, wasn't he? A movie?
Yeah, it's The Hunger.
The Hunger, that's right. Okay, off the top of my head, I was like blanking on, wait a minute, Bowie has been in a vampire-related media.
Yeah. With Susan Sarandon and Catherine Deneuve.
Yes, that's
excellent, right. Excellent movie. I watch it quite regularly. And the opening song is Bela Lugosi's Dead, so it's just like you're stepping right into a goth club right there with vampire feeding and club action. It's delicious.
Everyone, don't forget, we are also now have a Patreon page, so if you'd like to help donate to the Dead TV podcast and help sustain us, please go to the Patreon page in the link in the description box below for this podcast episode. You can also find us on social media, such as the Dead TV Podcast on Facebook and at Chris D S A V on Twitter. Mr. Zeneca also has a Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me at Elegantly Kinky, and I have my own website, which you can keep up to date with my latest parties in the Philadelphia area. And that is at elegantlykinky.com.
And don't forget to also please, 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 please rate and leave a comment in this episode, as this is a free podcast on iTunes and Google Play. One of the best ways for us to get more listeners is if you share this podcast episode on your own social media, or if you're not into social media that much, at least rate and comment in the section below or on our website at radiohorror.com. That's where else you could also leave a comment if you can't leave one on iTunes. I've had some people tell me iTunes, for some reason, gets, like, stuck somehow with the internet connection and going to ratings. I don't know it exactly off the top of my head why or how that happens. It has happened to me. But you can also leave a comment on our on the Facebook page, too. You can also leave a comment, too. And more people will see those great comments and want to tune into the Dead TV podcast, which will return in 2 weeks. With your host, Dr. Chris.
And Mr. Zeneca.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Good night.